From Omaha, Nebraska, Ryan Cruikshank and Dave Owens of Names Without Numbers meet with The Antidote. Thanks for coming for a talk with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. And you pronounced my name correctly. That's kudos to you.
I've met some other Cruikshanks. And Owens, that's an easy one.
Well, yeah.
Easy.
Okay, guys, it's time for the two of you to stretch your memories. Take us back to the earliest days of Names Without Numbers. How did it begin?
Oh, goodness. Well, 50 years ago. It seems like that now. But yeah, we've been together for, 25?
It'll be 24 years this year.
That's wild.
That's a long time.
So I guess a long story short, and this is Dave talking. I was in a band, out of high school, and Ryan was in another band in the Omaha area. And Ryan's band was kind of dissolving. And so I told my guys, hey, those guys are breaking up. We need to snag a few of their members and basically form a super group.
You formed us with our powers combined.
And that was kind of the humble beginnings of Names Without Numbers. Loosely, we had a different lead singer for a while under a different band name. That didn't work out, but we became Names Without Numbers in the year 2000, and we've been doing it ever since.
Yeah, and we were, it was right out of high school. Like, I feel like we were kids.
We were like 19, 20.
We were very young.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your music. The band re-released your debut EP on its 20th anniversary. The thing is, I find so many bands want to ignore their early stuff, but you're still proud of that release.
Yeah.
I think a lot of bands, in the music industry in general, it's not cool if you age. In the music industry, everybody's young. I don't know. I think embrace it. You are who you are, and you wrote this music, and it's part of you, and you're part of that music, and I think, we're just embracing that. I'm proud of what we did 20 years ago. I think it's still good. It's still relevant to what I like.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're re-releasing that.
Yeah. I mean, we're super proud of it. Like Ryan said, is that that record kind of got us the attention, if you will, and kind of helped launch our mild careers. I don't know if you call it a career since we weren't necessarily paying the bills with it by any means, but that record definitely got us a lot of attention. We still play some of those songs today. Even 20 years later, we're still playing some of those songs that people just love, and we're proud of it.
The thing is, that was an angsty kind of EP. I'm thinking of the song Loose Tongues and Hurricanes. Some of the lyrics say, a gaping mouth, words flow like cyanide, poisoning relationships and killing trust with dagger lips. That is brutal. Was a song like that a reflection of your age?
So we've had, all truth told, a couple lyricists, and that was our previous lyricist. I agree with you. His lyrics are very cutting and very to the point, and I love it. Everybody at that age has a lot of angst. Has a lot of anger, some issues they're going through. We went through a lot at that age, but I think the lyrics on that album are far better than the music, probably. And I'm still proud of all of that we put together on that EP.
Well, you guys came out full bore right from the start. Something that I'd heard was that your very first show was in 2000, and you were the opener for Jimmy Eat World. That's a huge coup. How did you manage that?
I am not sure. You have to ask this guy. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, so the story is true. Our very first show as a band was opening for Jimmy Eat World. But the caveat is that early on, we got into the world of being concert promoters and booking bands.
Ah.
So that was something that I was really passionate about. Was booking bands. And I kind of took it on for almost 20 years as a side hustle just by myself as booking bands. But with that being said, Jimmy Eat World was one of our favorite bands, and they happened to have some off days from a tour. and I was able to book them for like $500, and I made us an opener. Just, so.
And I remember distinctly, like I said something really dumb from the States, because that's what I do. That's some sort of part of my MO, is saying things dumb on stage. And I said something like, they are my reason for living. And my fiance at the time was there, and it didn't go over well with her. But yeah, that was like, it was the biggest thing in our lives at that time. It was like, we've reached the pinnacle, opening for Jimmy Eat World, our hero.
Yeah.
You sort of did have the inside track, didn't you? I mean, being the promoter, did they have any option?
Yeah, we definitely had the upper hand, if you will, on that show.
There's something I've never been able to figure out with Names Without Numbers, and it's because of your sound. I mean, it's indie rock, it's pop punk, it's power pop, emo. Even a few songs have some screamo vocals thrown in. So do you guys actually have any idea who you really are?
I'm still trying to figure out who I am and who we are. Like, we've been criticized because of that same thing. Like, you know, people think it's a bad thing that you deviate from one song to the next, like what the sound is or isn't. I don't think there should be rules to it. Like, you should be able to write whatever kind of songs you want to come out with. And if people want to listen to them, great. Like, I don't know. I don't think that should be a criticism of a band. You know, not that you're criticizing, but like we've been criticized for that before. But I, you know, it's kind of all over the map, but it's all in the rock genre. We're into rock, but we're into lots of rock, like from one end of the spectrum to the other. So it comes out sometimes in our music.
And that's the thing that makes you distinctive, because you're not doing cookie cutter songs.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like some bands, they tend to like gravitate to one specific, like AC/DC or someone like that, like where they like have a specific sound where they want to try to like recreate the magic of like what made them successful or what people are telling them that you should do over and over and over because it's great. Well, yeah, that's great. But like, I feel like you should just keep creating and be who you are within, you know, what you know and what you like. And that may be a little bit different from one song to the next.
I think some of the magic with that songwriting, though, of having sometimes that harder edge in some of the songs is, like, I'm kind of the hardcore guy in the band.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love the heavy stuff. And but I also like, obviously, indie rock and pop as well. But Ryan, you know, he leans a little bit more pop rock, indie rock, Death Cab for Cutie type of style. Yeah. So the two of us writing songs and really coming together, I think is really, at least to me, kind of special on that songwriting aspect of having a heavier edge sometime, but still keeping the pop sensibility in the hooks.
Yeah. And if you let other people color what you're bringing to things and they let you color their stuff with what you're bringing, like it's a good amalgamation of who you are together. And if you kind of expand that to a four-piece band, like we all kind of bring it in different directions and stretch it a little bit more. And that's what music is all about.
Well, I know my thoughts is that it would just be boring creating generic songs day after day.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I agree. Who wants to do that? Like, okay, we have a formula and we're going to follow the formula every time. Let's just experiment and let's play something that's been on your mind and we all kind of see where it goes.
Staying back in the past, the Names Without Numbers' first full-length, Running Marathons, Chasing Ambulances, came along in 2003. You really bumped up your game on that one, because it's way more fine-tuned than the EP. Now, was that from having more experience, better production, or what was it?
Oh, I think it's probably a yes.
Yeah,
that's yes. A yes.
All the above?
Yeah, because I don't know how far the two were apart from each other, probably 3 years.
About 3 years, yeah.
So we were better. But we also got the help of the Mogus Brothers in Nebraska, who were producing some Saddle Creek records at the time, Bright Eyes. So Mike Mogus is in Bright Eyes. His brother produced record. So it was like our experience plus experience from the outside telling us like, oh, this is you know, this is a better direction to go in. So it was a lot of things. And I don't know, that album, you know, a lot of things came together, and it's sort of like you look back and you're like, what exactly happened? I'm not sure. But we, I mean, it came together at the right time, sort of just magically.
Yeah, I mean, I think that first EP that we were just talking about, I think we were still kind of discovering what direction that we wanted to go in. If you listen to it, I listened to that to that old EP, and there's so many influences of even the Juliana Theory, Get Up Kids, and then heavier stuff, almost like Boy Sets Fire.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to throw in one thing real quick. A lot of people may not remember or even realize, outside of Omaha in the Midwest, is that on that first EP, our drummer, John, was actually the lead singer, and he sang lead and played drums at the same time.
Huh.
I didn't change my voice over the years.
Yeah.
Different guy.
So a little side fact is our first EP was our drummer singing lead, and then me and Ryan singing all the backup harmonies. But through that process, you know, we just became writing machines, trying to really hone in on stylistically where we wanted to go, what we wanted to do. We kind of just, you know, decided having our drummer be the singer wasn't probably the best move. It was hard to sing and play drums at the same time. He was out of breath all the time, and sound guys hated it. So it was a very short season. It seemed like probably maybe 6 months we were experimenting with other people singing, and nothing worked out. And we're like, well, let's just do it ourselves. And essentially me and Ryan looked at each other and said, well, who wants to do it?
Yeah, so I'm a reluctant lead guy.
So Ryan did it. But yeah, we just became riding machines on that first full length, running marathons, chasing ambulances. And we just had a few songs on there that got us a lot of attention and kind of made us who we are today.
I want to pull in one of the songs from that release that I think showed some of the improvement. This is really one of my favorites from that album. 8 Hours from Omaha. I mean, that's a tight song with great vocals, but it's the lyrics that really make it stand out. It seems time's been stealing all my dreams. I'm victimized within my narrowed mind. Perhaps I've missed the grandest view, which I've been so focused on the boundary lines. It's as if that song was prophetic, because that was the last band release for a long, long time. So what happened?
That was a very, I mean, we were doing that 100 days a year,
yeah.
And not getting anywhere. It was sort of a like, what are we spinning our wheels for? There are bigger things out there to be chasing, like families and what we want to get on our, you know, with our lives. Like, we were all pursuing degrees in college. Like, there are bigger things and grander things out there.
Not me.
Well, not Dave. But, and we were weekend warriors and then some, touring a lot. You know, what is this for? We're not getting paid anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can only go 8 hours from Omaha because that's the amount of time that we can drive in one direction and get somewhere the farthest from Omaha and play some shows to, like, expand our fan base,
mm-hmm.
and get back for college and for classes and for work. So that was sort of a how much longer can this last sort of song. And that album was a lot of, like, we were going through changes in our lives. Like, we were having kids and studying and doing school and getting into the professional careers that we have. Like, this is sort of the final hurrah, right? Like, we've reached the pinnacle of where we're going. Who knows how much longer this is going to last? And that was, you know, that's part of that song.
So you gave up running marathons?
Well, yeah. In a way, yes.
Yeah. I mean, if I understand your question, are you asking, like, why was there such a long time before new music?
Exactly.
You know, it was just go, 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 go. You know, play shows, play shows, play shows nonstop, that we never really took the time off to write another record.
Well, to live our lives. Like, we, you know, we took some time to, like, be humans and kind of move on with our lives.
And that was our kind of our goal, though, is, like, we were really proud of that record. And, like, we really want to do this hardcore and see what happens as far as, like, getting a record deal and things like that. But after about 3 years of doing that and never really taking too much time off, that's kind of what happened. And then we took a break.
Yeah. So. And, you know, we have families and we did things. And then it's like.
So partially my fault. I'm kind of the guy in the band that is constantly, let's do this and let's do that. And let's live in a van down by the river and let's sell everything we have. I'm the crazy one and Ryan's the more realistic one and brings me back to reality.
So we took that time and after that, we're like, well, okay, now I'm restless. Now I'm not doing anything. What can we come up with? What have we written in the past 3 years that we've been dormant and bring it back?
Well, you were talking about a break. I mean, you think of break like a coffee break, but it was 16 years. You know, with Names Without Numbers coming back with a new full length, Silos and Smokestacks in 2019. So you really just had that urge to bring it all back? Or was it that you're just trying to recapture your youth?
Well, I mean, like me and Ryan, neither one of us stopped playing per se. Like we were always like playing in church, playing in other bands. Like I was in a couple other bands after Names Without Numbers stopped. I started touring and playing music with another band, and I started touring as a front of house sound engineer for another band. So I kept busy, and Ryan kept busy as well, just doing all kinds of, you know, different things. We remained best friends during all of it. And I know kind of the funny turning point for me was kind of the same time Jimmy Eat World got back together and put a new record out, and that was 2016.
Mm-hmm.
They came out with Integrity Blues. At least for me personally, that was kind of like the inspiring moment of, this record's really good. They haven't done anything for a long time. Like, I really want to do this again. So that was kind of the moment for me where I said, like, hey, let's try to do this again and see what happens.
Like Dave said, we've been playing in churches together, and I had come across a little bit more time. My kids were getting older. I was done with my college, and it was sort of like time ideas that we had, and that's a lot of the ideas from the Silos and Smokestacks records were just things that have been percolating, just sort of dormant and on our own. We brought back together, mm-hmm. and we're like, hey, you know, we can do this again, and we don't have to take it as seriously as we did when we were kids and tour 100 days of the year, but let's go out a few times a year and do some mini tours and write good music and produce good music.
I think for me, the standout song from Silos and Smokestacks is Dragonfly and the Owl. I've never been that good at saying what I mean. My silence always getting in my way. But let me tell you now, before my chances slip away, that you're the most precious things.
Mm.
But now I've been wondering something. Why did you specifically choose an owl and a dragonfly for the song?
Well, we've been talking a little bit about my children, and those are my kids. So that album is the first album that I wrote all the lyrics to. I maybe wrote a few songs for running marathons, but that was when I kind of took over because John left the band. I sort of took that on me. So to me, like, writing songs is about where you're at. Writing from your soul. So that was my first foyer into lyricism. And I think to be honest with yourself and draw from a place that's the most passionate and the most at your core is the way to go. And my kids are that to me. And so that song is about my kids. You know, it's just about my relationship with them. And one of my kids is kind of symbolized as a dragonfly and the other as an owl in sort of our family.
That's cool. But not their nicknames.
No, not the nicknames. But it is the tattoos. So I have lots of tattoos. And I have a tattoo of a dragonfly and a tattoo of an owl on my body for them. Because that's kind of what symbolizes them in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. That's probably one of my favorite songs off the record as well. Just I think as fathers and everybody in the band has kids, so I think we definitely resonate with that song probably the most. And I know we've heard that from a lot of other people as well, that song just really resonates with them.
when you were doing the album, did you expect that song to sort of be the hit?
Well, no, I never do anything intentionally to like, what are other people going to think about this? But that was the one that to me was like the most personal. It's the first time that I put so much into it that I mean, just the feelings that it brought out of me, it made me cry. I won't cry very often, but like just the sentiment that I put into that song, like it was very emotional for me. Because like the bridge especially is like, okay, what if in 20 years, like we can sit down, because they're kids. At that point I wrote it like they're little kids, and you look at them as like 6 and 2. You look in 20 years and you see them like, oh, what if in 20 years we can sit down and have a couple beers? What would the conversations be like with us in 20 years when you're adults and you can think for yourselves? We can have a great conversation about how you grew up and the things that you thought of me. That's incredible to think about, and like what you're contributing to their lives and like how you can impact them. I don't know. I'm getting kind of emotional now. Like they're so, or what if I'm gone? Like what if in 20 years I'm not here and you just have the memory of me to move on. So that's sort of what that song kind of is for me. It's just this like relationship that you can have with your kid and like what it can evolve into.
This must be obvious what I'm doing. I'm running through your discography. So now we're back to today's date and age. And Names Without Numbers, you know, you guys have already been serious about making the music, as you've mentioned. And you released a new EP, Greatest Hits 2021 to 2023, through Small Step Records. I mean, of course, it's a perfect title, because the songs really are that great. But you got to tell me, like, is this just a collection of singles, or did you mean it to be more?
So I love this question. Kudos to you. I love this question. Because, yes, it is supposed to, like, we had initially written the song. So it was, like, during the pandemic, trying to, like, write the songs mm-hmm. together. But it was, like, written together, but then we had a lot of challenges along the way. So we sort of started to like, okay, let's release these one at a time as we get them done.
Yeah, challenges he means by like actually getting it out into the world.
Yes.
For people to hear.
Yes. So there were roadblocks and there's things that like kept it to where like we were releasing it one at a time. So it's like, well, to me, like listening to it is a little disjunct. It doesn't sound like it's a fluid record. And we did release them like 6 months apart, you know, in some cases. So it's like, well, it doesn't sound the same. And we had different mixing engineers finalize them. So it does kind of sound a little bit like it was different. So, I mean, it ended up, it sounds great. Like, yeah. I love it. But the title was sort of a tongue-in-cheek, like, well, it sort of does sound like a lot of different things that we've done over the last 3 years. But it was initially intended to be released together. So let's use a title that kind of is a nod to both of those.
I guess the reason I ask that is because three of the songs share a link. Everything Ends is tagged Future, Florida Present, and another favorite of mine, The Ghosts That Haunt These Halls, has been labeled Past. So is there a story with that?
There's not a through line. There's not like technically a story that links the three songs. It was more thematic. If you listen to the Past, it's about, you know, past transgressions. The Present mm-hmm. song is about living in the moment and sort of just embracing things as they are. Not looking back, not looking forward, sort of just being present. And then the Future song is about moving forward after an unfortunate set of events. So it's more looking forward and looking future. It doesn't necessarily have the same like characters, although you could definitely paint a picture that would flow from what happens in those songs in a through line, but it doesn't have the like, same characters necessarily, no.
You guys have shared a little bit about doing shows. I haven't been out to any shows in quite a while, but what about the band? Like, do you have dates planned for 2024?
Yeah, we definitely do. We are headed to Minneapolis, Minnesota. So getting a little bit closer to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
We usually stay around the Midwest, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, South Dakota.
8 hours from Omaha.
Basically anywhere from 8 or 9 hours from Omaha.
And who does all the driving?
Oh, Dave does.
I
Dave
do 90%.
Yeah. Dave does 90% of the things in this band. I'm going to tell you. The guy like puts all of our
social media
together, all of our rack gear for the onstage performance. He even prints us out set lists and like gets stuff together. I basically show up and I play. I help write songs.
You write really good lyrics.
Yeah, so, like yeah. Melodies and like I do guitar things. But this guy does the rest of it and he books all the shows. And
you're just coasting along, man. Come on.
Pretty, yeah, I'm a freeloader in this band. Let's be honest.
Well, he does share passwords to like social accounts with me, so.
He has my HBO password. Right. Now it's going to get canceled because I'm saying it online. They're going to find it. But yeah, that's what I contribute to this band.
We got to talk about one final song, and that's You Do the Talking. I do think that's the best thing Names Without Numbers has ever recorded. But the thing is, the song also took me by surprise when it says, "What if my words all come out wrong? What if they criticize my songs? Can't assemble the words that would make more sense, and unable to fake the confidence." I mean, seriously? You actually have struggles with being a performer? Or is this just social situations?
It's both. This is another song that's very near to my heart. Like, this is what I struggle with. I have social anxiety. I also have stage fright. And being a lead singer, someone who's supposed to be like the one delivering this message and all eyes in the room are on you. So it's about performing and kind of how terrifying that can be. And if it's what you want to do, like it conflicts with, you know, who you are. So being kind of yourself in that situation is very, very scary. And that's what I deal with performance. And then like in social situations, I'm also very coming into a room and just kind of making small talk is also very scary. So it's just a song to that. Like, you know, I know there are a lot of people out there who probably deal with the same thing. And it's just more like, I see you. I deal with that too. And you can do things if you kind of shut off that voice in your head. You can still do these things, getting on stage and being who you are.
Before we actually began this talk, you guys were mentioning about being in the studio. Are you actually recording more stuff?
Yeah. So for the past 5 months, we've been working on another EP down in Kansas City. We're working with a new producer, Josh Barber. He's done a lot of stuff, such as Norma Jean, Hit the Lights. And we've been longtime friends. He's been a longtime fan of the band just in general. And when me and Josh, our paths kind of crossed a few years ago at Furnace Fest, we just got to talking. And so, yeah, so working on a new EP, almost done. We're doing vocals right now.
We are currently, like, it's not just a now in time. It's a now physically we are in the studio.
Yeah, we're sitting we're in
inside the studio.
Yeah, recording. We're sitting there right now.
Okay, so you're going to make us all happy by bringing out something just fabulous.
I hope so. I think we're working, as I mentioned, with a kind of a new producer and a new studio that we haven't been in before. This is definitely probably one of our favorite projects.
Probably. What are you talking about?
Today, it is our favorite project, I think, that we've ever done as a band.
Yeah.
And that may be cliche to say, like every band's like, this is the best record that we've done. And
we're happy with it. And how it's going, it blows my mind every night I listen to it.
Yes.
I mean, and that's all that this is about. Is
one of our goals as a band is like with the music that we release, we want it to sound super professional, high quality, radio ready. So even with that being said, you know, every time we go to record, we want to release a product that sounds better and better.
Good for you. Dave and Ryan of Names Without Numbers have wasted their entire evening with The Antidote. Thanks for the talk, guys.
No, we loved it. You are awesome. We appreciate your support and wish you nothing but the best.